This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Well, good morning and welcome to The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin on Zoomer Radio, aided and abetted by yours truly, Dean Holland. How are you? Charlie, missed you last week.
I was going to say, nice to hear your voice. How are things?
Things are good. Things are busy. Yeah, I've been spending time in Port Dover. And because of that, and I know you have announcements, all I will say is that I have been, the route that I normally travel from Collingwood to Port Dover, which I've done a couple times now in the last week, is through all of the rural areas. And it is so beautiful. Pretty. So many cornfields, so many soybean fields, so many garden centers, just bursting with mums everywhere you look. And so I know, although we still are in our, we have one more weekend of summer, but you can feel fall, you can feel autumn tiptoeing in, but you know what? It reminds me how beautiful our province is.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And you can smell it too. Don't you find you can really smell autumn? It changed. Everything changed kind of September 2nd. It was suddenly, there was that Christmas. You could, you know, just certain.
Oh,
something.
Well, now don't get too ahead of it. We haven't even had Halloween. Don't jump to Christmas.
No. Crisp with a P.
Oh, not crispness.
Not crisp. Santa Claus. No. The air, just the air has that sense and that smell. And I imagine, are you seeing some, with all your driving back and forth, are you seeing some early fall color?
I am starting to see not an abundance yet, but I guess it's coming. And perhaps to the north of my Collingwood here, maybe I guess to the north it would happen earlier and it comes down. But it is starting. Yeah.
Well, I just wondered in terms of the how much the drought has affected some of the plants. Mm. But of course, where you're driving more southwest there, there was really no drought down that way? Like, is the corn big and fat and juicy?
The corn seems to be, you know, fairly substantial, but and some of the farmers are still having their irrigation systems on. I've seen a couple where they either roll those big apparatuses over the fields, or there was another one that I passed a couple times where they have these enormous sprinklers that just shoot it in a circle around like hundreds and hundreds of meters in any direction.
And they're portable, those, like, they move the irrigation around, because obviously you can't irrigate permanently.
No.
It's all kind of comes out when you need it and gets put away in the barn when you don't.
Yeah.
And gets obviously put away for the winter. So, don't want to talk about winter yet.
And lots of pumpkins too. My goodness, pumpkins on the sides of the roads. Must have been a good pumpkin season. Holy camoly. I've seen so many places that are advertising, either privately or garden centers, just huge, copious amounts of pumpkins. And I don't think I've ever seen as many white pumpkins before as I have this year.
Trendy,
I guess they're very much trend. Yeah, very in vogue.
Okay, so that's interesting you bring up pumpkins, because I heard a gentleman, a farmer from Prince Edward Island on one of the radio stations, who said the pumpkins are a lot smaller this year out east, because they've had sort of east of Canada, eastern Ontario and the Maritimes has struggled with water this year. Ones home in PEI, we'll send the little ones out there, but they just don't expect the same huge jack-o'-lanterns. But that might not be so true, like you said, here more western Ontario and through the west.
Okay, now I know you have announcements, but let me give out the numbers, okay?
Well, sure, good point. Buddy. Yeah.
If you live in Toronto, give us a call at this number, 416-360-0740. And if you live anywhere else in the province, any of those places we've been talking about and beyond, please use this number, 1-866-740-4740. Okay, and do let Owen know if you're a first-time caller, and I will give you the garden wings. And we want you to call often, call early, and please one question per call. And it's all over to you, Charlie.
All righty. So lots going on, of course. It's that time of year. Today, the Agent Court Garden Club invites absolutely everybody to come and view their annual flower, veggie, and design show. It's a drop-in, free drop-in between 2 and 4. Of course, it's happening at the Knox United Christian Education Center, which is at 2575 Midland at Shepherd in the Toronto area. It's a kind of a cool thing. It's those competitive members who, you know, bring out their best flowers and vegetables and design. So, of course, it will be very, you know, beautiful. It'll all be really interesting to see who wins what and, you know, check out the arm wrestling that's going on in the corner. Meanwhile, of course, there's even a tea room afterwards, so you can always grab a little bite to eat if you do drop in to the Agent Court Garden Club's event. Tomorrow, the Ontario Rock Garden and Hardy Plant Society is meeting in Toronto at the Toronto Botanical Gardens. It's at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. A gentleman named Geir Moen, he is from Norway, and he's speaking on alpines. There's also a plant sale for those of you that want to pick up some interesting hardy or rock garden plants. There will be some very cool plants for sale. And Peter Keeping will be there with all of his clematis. He is retiring his Bowmanville farm, if you will. He's been growing clematis for a very long time. He's shutting that down. He's retiring, and he's selling off all his inventory. And it will be in Toronto tomorrow at the TBG. So 1 o'clock or even earlier if you want to check out the sale. Monday.
Peter resides where? Where is his
Bowmanville?
Farm? Bowmanville.
Oh. Yeah, yeah. So, Monday. So, something going on every day for those of you that just want to get into garden stuff. I will be at the Port Hope Horticultural Society Monday evening. I believe it's at 7:30. Where is it? 7:30 to 9:30. My topic is designing for shade, which I think I'm going to talk a lot about dry shade, because there's so many kinds of shade, right? Mm-hmm. But I think I'll put a little emphasis on dry shade and, you know, under trees where the trees are sucking all the moisture, nothing grows, you know, big maples, big dense trees.
So then, of course, once you get your hands on it, it becomes cool shade.
Oh, you know, I'll wear my sunglasses. that meeting with me presenting is happening at the St. John's Church in Port Hope, the Parish Hall, 33 Pine Street North. So that'll be fun. Always looking for fun. And my final announcement is the Toronto Cactus and Succulent Club. This is for you, Dean. Mm-hmm, there is a show and sale happening next Sunday. So not tomorrow, but the 21st of September. And that's going to be, it's a pretty fun one. It was funny. I mentioned this last week when Paul Oliver was on the show. And he said, I don't grow those. They're way too much work. And I was like, what are you talking about? They're no work at all. And he's like, no, I always kill them. I go, clearly you make them work. So that, of course, the Toronto Cactus and Succulent Club will be meeting again at the Toronto Botanical Gardens in the Floral Hall from 10 until 4. There's vendors, so it's a big event. Lots of exhibitors, lots of cool stuff for sale. And then what's on display will be big, beautiful cacti and succulents brought in by the members to show off what the little babies you buy can turn into. So that's pretty fun.
Love that. And speaking of Paul, so you had a good show last week with Paul. I'm sure he's always delightful to have on the show.
Absolutely. And we talked quite a bit about birds, because we talked about migration.
Yes.
And I had been down here in the county. This is a very big migration point from the south. And Prince Edward County is an island. And of course, it's a little hop, skip, and a jump over to New York, though it's a pretty long flight for some of those little birds.
Yes.
So, yeah, there's banding. We went down to watch them, these big nets, and then the capturing of the birds and the banding and the writing down if they already are banded, and then letting them go, like, and measuring them and weighing them and getting a sense of the fat levels in their little bodies. Oh, it's all so amazing. I love it. And you know, we've got a lot of bird action here. They're very hungry, and I don't blame them, because, you know, winter is coming.
Yeah, and well, I was out. That was the first thing I did this morning after I had my first coffee. I put on my Schluffies and I went outside and I filled my couple of bird feeders because, again, I haven't been home as much this week. So And even when I was out there, you know, the black-capped chickadees, especially, even when you're right there at the feeder, they will come right down and say, thank you, and they'll start at it. Yeah. And they almost, like, talk to you. They're, like, a foot away. So
they're so friendly.
It's, they are very social
and not jittery. Like the finches are so, and blue jays, they all take off.
Blue jays, you think so big and that, and then they look around and they, my goodness, is if you like look from 100 feet away, they take off.
And they make a lot of noise. There's been a lot of noise from the blue jays. I noticed different sounds too. So it is interesting having them around, but I'm still seeing hummingbirds. And one of the things that Paul mentioned, which I will mention again, is continue to keep your hummingbird feeders filled with fresh food until at least 2 weeks when you haven't seen a hummingbird.
Oh, okay.
Because they are still moving down from the north, moving through. So don't give up. And of course, they more than any bird need our help to get all the way down to South America and or Central
well,
America.
That is a very good tip because I wasn't going to refill mine. So I will do that. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. We're into our first break, but give us a call. We'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
We are back here on The Garden Show, and as I mentioned, I guess autumn, it seems to me, it arrives officially on the 22nd, which is next Monday. I do believe that it arrives. That's what I'm pretty sure I read. So I think that we still have one more full weekend of summer, technically.
All right.
And I'm going to hang on to as much of it as I can. And I looked at the forecast when I woke up this morning having my coffee. It's supposed to be really, really nice, sunny all week. And temperatures between 20 and 25, I think, certainly up where I am.
I hear you. It's very warm here, the forecast as well. And I'm afraid to say no rain in the forecast. I'm still waiting on some, you know, about 3 days of solid rain to really make a difference here.
But. Yeah, we haven't had that, but we did get some this morning. It was wet when I went out this morning.
We had a tiny bit too.
We had a little bit this morning. So that's, I guess every little bit helps.
Yes, the lawns have certainly turned greened up a bit. And again, I'm not worrying about deciduous trees and shrubs. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to just cope at this point. But the evergreens are the ones I am specifically hauling my soaker hoses around to.
Okay, good idea. Okay. We've got our first caller, Teresa, on the line from Mississauga. Welcome to The Garden Show, Teresa.
Thank you. Good morning, Charlie. Good morning, Dean.
Good morning.
I have a question. We have an aquatic canna lily in our pond. It's new this year. How can I save it for the winter?
So actually, an aquatic canna lily is very similar to a regular canna lily. Slightly different parentage. So it has been selectively grown to be able to grow in boggy situations, wet situations. So what you're going to do with your canna to save it is exactly what you would do with a regular canna. And that is wait until there's been a frost. A frost will knock down the foliage, turning it brown, turning it black. At that point, you'll lift that plant out of the pond, let it drain out. Now, I assume it's in a pot in your pond, or did you plant it in the pond?
It's in a pot, but the pot is submerged into the water about 3 feet deep.
So I guess depending on what you do with your pond over winter, you may want to pull.
We put the heater and we have it going. Well, we shut the waterfall down, but we have a heater to keep it warm because we have goldfish in there.
Right, makes sense. So, so you don't do any fancy major cleaning in the fall or covering?
Yes. We clean it all up, the leaves and all that, and then we fill it up again. And my husband puts the heater in but we don't cover it or anything like that.
Okay. So if you want the canna to survive, it does need to be brought into a frost-free situation. So you can't leave it outside and expect it to survive. And so based on your maintenance you're going to do on the pond, you're going to pull that pot out either before a big frost or after a frost. But once it's been frosted, so leave it outside until it's been frosted, I guess is my point.
Okay.
Let it drain. You know, let that pot drain. You know, it's going to drain down. Clean up that foliage after it's sat outside. inside the pot. It's not dripping. It's virtually dried down. And then the pot, believe it or not, just needs to go in a cool, dark spot.
Usually we put them in the basement. In a container or something, it'll survive.
It will survive in that container as long as you keep it cool and dark, above freezing, of course.
Do I water it during the winter?
I beg your pardon? No, just let it be dormant. Take it out of the pot and then stick it into a Rubbermaid tub filled with straw or peat moss. But you can just leave them in the pot. They are fine. Just cool and do check every now and then, poke around, make sure the rhizomes aren't rotting. They're not all soft and mushy. Do not do any watering. And then, come spring, you might want to divide and make another pot full of, if it's been a beautiful canna, you want more. Once we're frost free, out it goes.
Lovely. Well, thank you very much. I'll do that. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Teresa. Thanks for the call. Charlie, you said something just before the break, and then when we talked about water there with Teresa, just reminded me, you're talking about watering, and we haven't had a lot of water this year. So just a good reminder, especially near the base of your trees, your humidifier water, your aquarium water, all of these things, don't dump it down the drain. Don't throw it down there. Walk it outside, throw it at the base of your trees, like give them every little bit you can get. And of course, the aquarium water, as you've pointed out, which is one of my favorite things I've learned from you over the years, is that it is so full of nutrients as well. Mm-hmm. So don't dump it down the toilet and down the drain. Put it out there in the garden.
Yeah, fish poo can be very effective for the garden. But, even the other things we've gone to the extremes of doing is taking a pail into the shower so that when you first turn on the shower, it's always really cold and kind of wait for it to warm up.
Yeah.
Grab that water. Don't let it go down the drain, right? We wash lettuce or tomatoes or potatoes. That water goes outside.
Yeah.
It does not go down the drain. Like it's just we're really, really being pretty precious with our water.
Okay. And of course, if you have a rain barrel, which of course are not very full this year, but make sure, that's a help as well. Mm-hmm. Okay. We have callers on the line. We have to go to break, but before that, here are the numbers 416-360-0740, 1-866-740-4740. Give us a call. We'll be back with more on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
We are back on The Garden Show. Let's jump right into our next caller. We have Connie on the line. And Connie, I understand that you are a first-time caller. Is that correct?
Yes, I am.
Well, then there you go. There, your garden wings. Welcome to the show.
You.
And you're calling from Welland. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right.
Good
morning. Nice.
Thank you. I have quite a few peonies, and they're close to 3 feet tall, and I don't know what to do with them now, what to cut them down or what I do with them.
Okay. Well, what I do is I leave them alone until there's been a frost. So we're getting to that time of year where people are wanting to start cleaning up their gardens. But what you want to do is let the plants naturally shut down before winter, and frost will do that. So it'll be usually an overnight where we wake up and the ground is sparkling and we look around and everything that was green is suddenly either brown or black or dropping off the trees. So it'll be kind of a radical change to our gardens once we get that first frost. At that point, your peony is asleep. So you can go out with your little pruners that morning or afternoon when it's dry and just cut the peonies down to roughly 5 to 10 centimeters tall, just right across, straight across, remove all that foliage and all those stems. Otherwise, I pretty much leave the garden alone, but I do cut the peonies down once there's been that frost. No fancy protection, nothing else. Just clean them up after the frost.
Oh, okay. That's simple enough.
Yeah, it is.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks
You're
so much
welcome.
For the call there, Ina. Yeah. Welland. And of course, they should have lots of water there. He scoops them out of the canal.
I was going to say, and they might never have a frost there because it's kind of the banana belt of Ontario.
Right, indeed. Okay. Hey, again, go ahead.
Do you want to do the numbers? And then I just want to tell you something.
Yeah. The numbers again, if you, because we do have lots of room on the line, 416-360-0740. That's the Toronto number. But if you're calling from Welland, or you're calling from Port Dover, or Prince Edward County, or any of these other places surrounding our throughout our province, please use this number. Won't cost you anything. 1-866-740-4740. And what do you want to tell me there?
I want to tell you, since you are doing all this work sort of between Brantford and Port Dover, mm-hmm. and you're on the road, and you will have to share with us exactly what you're doing in Port Dover before the end of the show, but have you ever been to a garden called Whistling Gardens?
I have not.
Okay, you need to look this up because, you know, if you have a chance with your driving back and forth, it's in a tiny, tiny little hamlet called Wilsonville. Okay. And I'm not exactly sure if you're going to pass through Wilsonville on your way back and forth, but it is about 20 minutes south of Brantford. It's a very cool garden. It's multi-acres. It's a 22-acre. It's a multi-award-winning botanical garden, home to North America's largest public peony and conifer collections. So, of course, this wouldn't be the best time of year to see the peonies, but certainly you can ooh and ah at some of the conifers because they, Darren and his wife have collected conifers from all over the world. Like, you just will see super interesting.
Well, I go almost right by it because I go down Highway 24 from Brantford all the way into Port Dover, and I pass through Scotland, and Wilsonville is just to the east of that. So if you actually, I pass through Boston, so it's even closer. Yeah. So I go right through there.
Yeah, so if you can detour off your, like if you have time, I know you're busy, but they have musical fountains that run twice daily. They've got all kinds of birds. They're bird collectors, so they've got a whole bunch of like really unusual exotic birds, and not to mention incredible gardens. So yeah, if you can just sneak a little hour off the road and out of your busy schedule to visit Whistling Gardens, I'd highly recommend it.
I was just looking at the map, and I travel down Cockshut Road, and that takes me through Boston, and they're just actually to the west of that, so I will make sure that I leave early one day or later to make that happen. Okay,
sweet, good idea.
Fabulous. Okay, let's go to our next caller. We have Ina on the line from Sturgis. Welcome to the Garden Show, Ina.
Hi.
Morning.
Hi, good morning.
Thanks for taking my call. I listen to you every Saturday. I just enjoy the show so much.
Thank you.
What do you got there, Ina? What's on your brain? What do you want to chat about?
I bought a Diplodenia this spring, and it is gorgeous. It's sort of from the Mandevilla family. Anyway, I wonder if I can take cuttings and whether they will start at all, and so I save it over the winter, because the flowers come open yellow, pale yellow, and then they deepen up and gradually become a beautiful peach color. It's just
nice.
It's full of flowers.
Yeah, I did the same thing. I purchased a couple this spring, and I thought they were going to be like pink because they were really kind of pink, bright pink buds. And yet, similar to you, those pink buds open up and then it's bright red. And I ended up with very patriotic containers at the front of my house that are all bright red and white. And the Diplodenia have been flowering nonstop. Yeah. Can you dig up these plants, or are they just too big?
It's fairly large, and the pot is too heavy to bring into the house.
Mm. Because this is not the optimal time to take cuttings. It is the days are getting shorter, nights, you know, cooler, and plants naturally do that shutting down thing where they just start to slow down. Taking cuttings at this time of year could take a couple of months to get roots. So that's why taking the plants in would almost be better, but it's worth a try. Do it sooner than later. You're going to want, of course, you know, about a 4-inch cutting. You're going to remove the flowers. Never try and grow roots from a cutting that has flowers on it, because all the energy goes into the flowers and seeds when you want energy going into roots. So cut off any flowers and get those cuttings. Now, would you put them in water or put them into moist soil, moist sand, something that's well drained, that they won't rot? That's always the fine line, that the little stems will rot at this time of year if they sit in too much moisture. I would use a rooting hormone, a hormone like a stim root is the trade name, and it's you would want the number one rooting hormone for a softwood cutting. And take several cuttings. Don't bang them all too close together. You probably will lose some along the way, but if you can even get one to root, that's all you need, because then you're good for next spring. And then you can take cuttings earlier in the season in preparation for next winter.
Oh, that's good. Yes.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ina, can you just clarify where you're calling from?
From Fergus.
Oh, from Fergus. Oh, okay. Yep. So it was written, and it's so funny. I was just in Fergus yesterday. I literally stopped on your main street and took a quick picture. I went through there on my way back from Port Dover. That's the way my navigation. I know that town very, very well.
Yeah.
One of the prettiest towns in Ontario.
Love it. It really is.
Yes, we have a Fergus Fall Fair going on this weekend.
Beautiful.
Nice.
Great. Well, thank you very much for the call.
Yeah, and, thank you. Don't be a stranger.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. Now. Okay, we're going to go into our next caller. We have Wilma on the line, and Wilma is calling from Holstein, Ontario. Welcome to the Garden Show, Wilma.
Good morning, everybody.
Morning.
I was given a bromelain a few weeks ago as a gift.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it says to water it from the top down through the leaves, branches.
Mm-hmm.
If it sits in the bottom branches for any length of time, is that a problem with it?
Not at all. That's exactly what it wants.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. So just so you know, so Wilma, bromeliads naturally grow in rainforests, and they don't have much in the way of roots growing out the bottom. They're very, very small roots and very limited soil. So when they grow in nature, they actually grow similar to orchids. They'll grow right in the little spots, little crotches between branches in trees and little notches on rocks and logs and that sort of thing. So they're not like terrestrial plants. They get most of their nutrient from the air and from rainwater. And as you notice, they grow in like a cup or a funnel, like an upside down funnel, or a right side up funnel. So the rainwater naturally falls into that cup, into that funnel, and sits there and works its way down between the leaves and trickles down to the limited roots and then evaporates and then it rains again. So that's what we have to try and do in our homes. We have to pretend we live in a rainforest. So when you are watering the plant, check it every couple of days, make sure there's always some water in the center. Try not to use water that is straight out of the tap. You want room temperature, preferably rainwater. If you have any rain barrels, save some rainwater for the winter. Or at least let your if you're on municipal water, let your water sit out overnight so that you're at least evaporating out some of the additives that are in municipal water, or any salts naturally occurring.
We're very, very fortunate. We're on our own well.
Good. And that's usually excellent water for the bromeliads. Keep it in bright light. It doesn't want to be in a dark corner. Keep it in a nice bright spot. Even in the winter, you know, it could be in a southern window, a western window. Lots of brightness is required. And the flowers will last for months and months if you can. And no dramatic temperature changes. Just, you know, regular room temperature. No, not beside an open window or a door that opens in the winter. It doesn't want that kind of shock of cold.
Yeah.
So just keep it. Yeah, room temperature, the higher the humidity, the better, and make sure there's always a little bit of water in the center.
Okay, thanks very much for the call there, Wilma.
Yeah,
Charlie, before we go to our next caller, Charlie, I had an altercation with a bromeliad many, many years ago. I was the bromeliad won. So we were moving. I was moving. This is about 30 years ago, moving from one location to the other. And I was in the back seat with all the plants on one of the final loads. The person driving took a left turn. The bromeliad tipped over and dumped all of the water in the crotch of my pants. And I went like this. And it was, that was my interaction with the bromeliad.
Okay. So here's a suggestion. If you're moving.
Dump the water out
first. Yeah. But as soon as you get to where you're going, water.
Dean learned a hard lesson that day. It was a and we all had a good laugh over
it. I bet.
Numbers to call, 416-360-0740, 1-866-740-4740. Let's go to Dory. She's calling from Mississauga, and she's a first-time caller. How are you, Dory?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good. I'm going to give you your garden wings. Thank you for being a first-time caller.
Thank you. Good morning, Charlie. I'm calling.
Morning.
Hi, Charlie. I'm calling about my hydrangea bush. It's all turned green now, all the flowers, and they're drooping down on the ground. Not all of them, but a lot of them, and a couple on the ground have turned brown. And I'm wondering what's the best time to cut them back?
You have two options. Some people prefer to cut them in the fall, just because they aren't always very pretty. But you can also leave them alone and cut them in the spring. I like cutting them in the spring because in the throughout the winter, those flowers that have now turned brown will remain on the shrub. So they're like a bronze, very soft, almost like a big snowflake looking kind of a flower all winter. I mean, in a big wind, some of them will blow away. But either way, they add to the interest, to the winter interest in our gardens. So I usually just leave mine alone and do all my cutting back in the spring. But like if for other people, they just don't like it, it's not a look they're looking for. And in that case, consider cutting in the fall. Remember, one of the things we really promote too is any hollow-stemmed plants that we're cutting in the fall could be a home for overwintering pollinators and various and sundry lovely little insects that we want to keep in our gardens. So if you are cutting things back in the fall, try to just lay them on the ground or lay them in a back corner in your compost area. Don't bag them and send them away because you could be sending away little critters that you actually should be keeping close by.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep. Yeah. Thanks very much, Dory. And don't be a stranger. Make sure you give us a call again. Thanks so much.
Yeah.
Okay.
You sound exhausted.
It's great. No, it's great. I really, you know what? We were talking about on the break. I miss when I have to miss a show. I miss it. I miss. This is such a lovely hour that always goes by so quickly, and I have learned so much over the last 4 years. Spending this time.
We're coming up almost to your anniversary. It was in November at some point.
I think it was in November. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna look back. We'll have a toast on your 4 year anniversary.
We will. let's go to our next call. Another first time caller. We have Sophia on the line, and she's calling from Barrie, Ontario. How are you there, Sophia?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good. I'm going to give you your garden wings, okay? Thanks for being a first-time caller.
Welcome. Good morning.
What do you got for Charlie there?
Okay. When I go for my walks in Barrie, I noticed all of the maple trees. I've got black spots on them, and I was just wondering why that was. They don't look very happy.
No, it looks like somebody from above shook a paintbrush covered in tar over top of those maples, and there's black blobs all over the leaves. So what that tells you is that any of those maples you're looking at that have the black spots on them are Norway maples. So they're not native. Like, you know how there's lots and lots of different maples, like sugar maple is a good example of a native maple. Norway maples are not native to Canada, though many were planted because they're tough trees. They grow, they handle urban pollution, they handle drought, they handle winter. There's a lot of reasons why a lot of them were planted, but they're very susceptible to a fungus that's commonly called tar spot because of those spots. So will it kill the tree? No. Is it unsightly? Yes. Should you worry about it? Not really. For some people, it's like, well, if I keep the leaves on my property, won't I be spreading this fungus around? Because the infection happens in the spring. The fungal spores are released during spring rain onto Norway maple trees, and then the spores sit there all summer, and once it starts to cool off and the days get shorter, you start to see the spots. It doesn't matter in terms of the health of the tree, though. The trees have had all summer. They've had full opportunity to photosynthesize. Now they're losing a little bit of tissue because of that blackness, so they're not photosynthesizing at 100%, but they're still fine. Those leaves will fall and everything will start again next year. I had a big Norway maple in my last home in Richmond Hill, and I basically just kept the leaves. I would just chew them up with the lawnmower, put them into the garden, and they would sit there. And of course, not every year is a little different. Some years you get really bad evidence of the tar spot, and other years not so much. It's kind of, it's very environmental, but like I said, it will not kill the trees.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Thank you so much for the call, Sophia.
Thanks so much for calling. Yeah. Okay. Don't be a stranger.
Don't be a stranger. No. Now, we have a few callers on the line to get to yet before the end of the show, but you know what? Give us a call still. We might be able to squeeze you in. 416-360-0740 or 1-866-740-4740. We'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And welcome back to The Garden Show on this 13th of September. And yeah, nice warm weather coming this week. Unfortunately, not a ton of rain in this province. But
Might just have to go to the beach from my end.
Okay. Here. Love it. Okay, let's go to our next caller. We have Evelyn on the line from Toronto. Welcome to The Garden Show, Evelyn.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call and happy Saturday.
Thank you
as well.
I have a question about my black-eyed Susans. I have a small garden of them, and they've been growing every year for about 20 years, and we get a bountiful of black-eyed Susans. It's not a large space. But this year, we've had about a third or less of the black-eyed Susans left. I can't see anywhere if anything has been dug up, but this is the first time it's ever happened, and they're very prolific every year.
Yeah, if anything, you can't really kill black-eyed Susans.
No, I
didn't think so. Is it possible that so the bunch that came up this year is just smaller than what you've seen in the past?
Actually, like nothing's come up.
Oh, so
it's almost as if they were all dug out, but there isn't any evidence of anything having been dug out. So just about a third of the plant has come up.
Oh, okay. So there is still some plant there, but not like you've had in the past. Well, in my experience in Toronto, you have raccoons who use fences and gardens as their own personal highways, and they are absolutely oblivious when they step on plants. They just walk right through and keep on going. So I have seen damage to very tough plants like hostas and daylilies, black-eyed Susans, that are being walked on, which, it just basically kills them where they're being walked on. That's all. So I wouldn't be overly concerned. As long as you've got something alive in that clump, I would do is either this fall or next summer, get a hold of some composted manure. So some well-composted manure, so 100% organic matter, get that soil bumped up, supplemented, amended with some quality organic material, and I think you'll find those black-eyed Susans will absolutely pop next year. It's likely just tired soil and lack of nutrient. Might be more shade has happened this year. Trees are getting bigger. Something's happened, which happens to our gardens. They get shadier with time usually. So the black-eyed Susans are okay in some shade, but they definitely need dappled sun as well. So if it's a question of sunshine, maybe take a chunk and move some into a sunnier spot just in an effort to get more flowers.
Okay. Oh, that's great. Thank you very much. I was wondering if I should put more in the ground, but I guess not, like plant any other.
I don't think so. If the original plant is still there, I'd keep it there. Just do what you can to encourage it to be a bigger, better plant. It's been great for 20 years. It should be great for 20 more.
Okay. Thanks so much for the call there, Evelyn. Okay, and next caller, Charlie, I believe that this caller had a question about a particular type of grass that you have mentioned on the show before. Prakash, welcome to the show from Mississauga. You there, Prakash?
Morning.
Morning, I'm trying trouble with the landline. It's strange because you'd expect it to be very solid, but it's cracking. Anyway, thanks for taking my call. You'd be surprised to know there's another program on CBC that's a garden show, which I picked up this information on, and I caught the last bit of it, so I thought I'd ask you about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's called something called sedge grass,
mm-hmm.
and it's they were talking about it as a good ground cover for places that's difficult to grow grass, and I can't. I don't never heard of this, and I said this would be ideal for me. So I thought I'd ask you how to find the seeds for this, and what is it that they're talking about.
Well, yeah, I'm wondering that myself. So they were talking about growing sedge grass where it's difficult to grow other grasses. Well, sedges, there's a bunch of them that are native to Ontario. Yeah, I mean, what you want to do is you want to go to a native plant nursery, probably. And it's not, well, I guess it could. So have you got a big area where you're just having trouble growing, like, lawn? Is that what you're trying to grow?
Well, around trees and along the fence line where it's difficult to grow grass, sometimes you got a lot of moss along that area. I thought this would may be a better option for, in those areas. Mm-hmm. And then there's a large tree, like a white maple tree that we have. That's at least, you know, 80 feet high. And nothing much grows underneath it, apart from nasturtium. But I thought I'd probably throw this in there and it'll grow.
I'm surprised nasturtiums grow beneath your maple. So, because nasturtiums want full sun, though they love dry. Keep in mind, any grasses, sedges as a group of grasses, do need some sun. They're going to grow much better actually in full sun. So that is a bit of a challenge when it comes to darker, shadier spots. I know we did talk... we did like Carex, C-A-R-E-X, tends to be a genus of grasses that are very tough and will grow in tough places. You are in Mississauga. You will find some sedges at Sheridan Nurseries, or check out some of the other, if you're near Milton, you've got Terra Greenhouses, any of the big garden centers, even at this time of year, will have some native sedge grasses is part of their regular grass collection or their perennial collection. So, you know, feel free to purchase from there. And then there are specialty native plant nurseries. Actually in Brantford, there's one as well. So just something to keep in mind that you might want to consider just shopping for in that situation.
Great. Thanks very much for the call there, Prakash. We are going to go to our last break. We'll be back with much more on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, phlox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
You see, we are back here on The Garden Show, and of course our mantra, call often, call early, one question per call, please. If you have a second question that's unrelated, we want you to call back, and that's exactly what Wilma has done.
Exactly.
And she's calling back from Holstein. Welcome to The Garden, back to The Garden Show, Wilma. Yeah.
Good morning again.
Morning.
Good morning. What do you got this time, Wilma?
I have to move some clematis. We are downsizing our garden, and I have two clematis growing up against the fence.
Mm-hmm.
And the fence is coming out, and we want to plant grass seed in that area this fall yet.
Mm.
Is it? It's probably not the ideal time, but can I move the clematis?
You can. How long have they been there?
Oh, probably 10, 12 years.
Right. Right. It might work. It might not. Have a place prepared to move them to. Make sure they're going to get the same kind of light. I mean, if they've been happy where they've been, then just try and keep them in that same comfortable location where you're going. Keep in mind that when you lift a plant that's been in 10 years, you are going to leave some roots behind. Make sure it's well watered before you start digging. Make sure when you do start digging, you pick up the biggest root ball you can possibly dig and make sure the soil stays attached to the roots. So that might mean using an old piece of a sheet or burlap or something to get in under to make that, keep that root ball together. Meanwhile, before you do any of that lifting of the plant, you're going to get out your pruners and cut the whole thing back to about a foot tall, because you're not going to be able to move it with 10 feet of vine sticking out the top. So
no,
you're going to
and
cut-
the vine is entwined in the fence too. So that was another question.
Yeah, well, that's one of the reasons as well. So you're going to cut the whole thing down to like a foot high. Of course, everything that gets cut off gets composted. That plant that you're going to lift will have a big root ball, some stem on top. You're going to move it into its new location, settle it into place, soil, water, whatever. Make sure that it's happy before winter and recognize that it is going to take a few years to get established. It's not going to bloom right away next year. It's going to just sit and put down some roots. It's not going to do very much, but be happy. You know, make sure it's a good fertile soil and a good amount of sun you move it into. But it should be fine if you can just get as many roots to go with it as possible.
Thanks very much for the call, Wilma. We're going to Barbara in Dunville. Welcome to the Garden Show, Barbara.
Hello.
Morning.
Hi. What do you got there, Barbara?
What I have is Charlie had a caller on about bromeliads. And Charlie said that the flower lasts for months and months. Isn't that the bract that lasts for months and months?
Technically, yes.
Yes. And well, the flowers are so tiny.
Yes.
They only last about a month.
Right. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. It's that showy bract that we think of as the flower. And it is showy because it's usually bright red or bright pink.
It certainly is.
Yeah. Yeah,
they certainly are. Okay, that's all I wanted to say. Thanks for pointing that out.
Yeah,
thanks very much,
Barbara the botanist.
Barbara the botanist. That's not a bad thing to be.
Regarding bromeliads.
And now we're going to Deb, our final caller on the show, calling from Hanover. Welcome to the Garden Show, Deb.
Hi. I had a soft maple taken down in the backyard some years ago. It was a while. And then 3 years ago, I had a fence put up. Now I'm getting mushrooms in the grass. I have put an antifungal powder on them. I have dug them out 3 times, put soil down and grass seed. I have used Roundup.
Oh, that won't kill the mushrooms. That'll kill the grass. Okay, so the mushrooms are bothering you, obviously. Okay, but the bottom line is that those mushrooms are doing what mushrooms do. They are decomposers, and under your grass are roots from the tree that you took out, and the roots are being decomposed by the mushrooms. The little actual mushrooms that pop up above ground are the fruiting bodies of the mushrooms. Below ground is all what we call the hypha, so all the fine filaments that are doing all that decomposition, releasing all kinds of wonderful nutrients into your soil to grow your grass. The only thing you can really do, I mean, obviously you could get out a backhoe and dig up all those roots and then put everything back, but I don't think anybody would do that. If you have anybody in the family who is a golfer, you get them out early in the morning and they hit the heads off those little toadstools early in the morning before they release more spores. And that way they at least are not visible all day. They'll come up at night and do their thing in the morning. But you have to let them do their thing underground. Eventually the mushrooms will slow down because the roots will disappear.
Okay, thanks for the call there, Deb. And my goodness, it is the time for us to say goodbye. Is fast approaching. We have a couple minutes left.
That sounds like a song or something.
Yeah.
Isn't it time to say goodbye?
There you go. Song.
I just want to remind everybody, it is September. We got to think about next spring. We got to think about our bulbs that bring us so much joy in the spring, the colorful tulips and daffodils and, oh gosh, hyacinths, allium, all of them, beautiful, fritillaria. So we do have a promotion running on a website called Flower Bulbs Are Us. Just like Toys Are Us, flowerbulbsareus.com. 10% discount on all your orders if you put in the secret code Charlie. Spell it any way you want. Capital C, lowercase, but it's C-H-A-R-L-I-E, like Charlie Brown. And And yes, it's wonderful, super good quality bulbs. Not like those cheap ones you buy at your local Home Depot. Nope. These are way better, much bigger bulbs, give you bigger flowers. So
beautiful.
Yeah, just something to consider. Oh. And you've got another busy week. Oh, right. So tell us what you're doing in Port Dover. You've got 30 seconds.
Yeah. So yeah, as you know, I've been a stage actor for most of my life. And about 25 years ago in Fergus, ironically, where I was yesterday, I was traveling through at the Theater on the Grand back in year 2000. I was part of a show called Memories of the Rat Pack. And I have always handled the Frank Sinatra role in that show. And we are going up this week, Tuesday, for a 2-week run at the Lighthouse Theater in Port Dover. We haven't done the show since, I guess, just before COVID, but we've done it for 25 years. Same couple of guys. And we got a full band. And we open run for 2 weeks there. And then we run over to Port Coburn and we play for a week over there. So I've got about 24 shows ahead of me over the next 3 weeks. Yep.
Great. Well, don't drink too many martinis on stage. You might fall off.
No. Frank Sinatra was a Jack Daniels. Oh. What are you talking about?
And you can't get Jack Daniels now because there's no American liquor in Ontario. Apple juice will do. Thanks so much, Dean. See you all again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio. The new AM 740. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.